paranormal. Para X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Gathering. The supernatural world can be a dark, intimidating, and scary place. We gather to shine light on the mysterious and misunderstood aspects of the paranormal world. We bring to the table years of experience as mediums, healing channels, and paranormal investigators.
We share true stories from our experiences to dispel fear where we can and help you discover the amazing layers that make up the paranormal world. You are invited to gather around the metaphysical table with us and discuss the worlds of the unseen on The Gathering Radio Show.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Gathering Radio Show on the Para X Radio Network. And this is Heidi.
And this is Stephanie, and welcome to this thought-provoking Tuesday.
Ooh, nice stuff.
I thought it was appropriate.
I think it is. This will be a thought-provoking Tuesday for sure.
Absolutely.
Super exciting.
I know, it is. How are you?
I am excellent. How are you?
I'm good, too. It's fabulous outside today, and it has been, and so everything is hunky-dory, right?
Yep. Exactly. That's the idea anyway, idea behind it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what's shaking? Anything exciting besides our show tonight? Because it's going to be a shaker.
It is going to be a mover and a shaker.
Yes.
Everything's been good. It's been very busy again. I say that all the time, but something has shifted in the atmosphere. It isn't just the different retrogrades and the solar eclipses or the whatever eclipses are happening. We've had a couple now recently, but I don't know, something has shifted and it has woken people up to needing, I don't know, answers or what. I am getting swamped at work, which is great. I'm super excited about that. But I've had so many people reaching out that I haven't talked to for years. People referring new people to me saying, you've got to go see her. So that's great. I'm doing so many sessions with people, intuitive sessions, channeling sessions, whatever. It's awesome because people are looking for something different now. And I think, you know, as we're coming out of this unimaginable time, you know, the lockdown and pandemic and everything, they've been shaken to the core. And and those that are coming out of it are wondering, what does this mean? And what do I do next? And I can't go forward, you know, the way that I was before all of this. So I'm grateful that I can help, and but it's been incredibly busy. So, which is, it's a good thing. And then it's, you know, there's not enough hours in the day sometimes. So,
I hear you.
But we did a shamanic breath work, this weekend. I had a private group actually ask me to lead them in a shamanic breath work, and it was, wow, it was so powerful. There was 12 people there, and it wasn't that big of room. So everybody's lined up like they're going to do yoga, except we don't have enough room. And so, but it was still good. People were open. They came with just open hearts and open minds and ready to try something they had never done before. And people had some really cool experiences. So that was fun. And, you know, it was, it was in Uptown. We were in this location in Uptown. And so, you know how not only inside were we kind of low on space, but outside, you know, everything is, houses are just stacked right next to each other, yeah. and everything's kind of on top of each other in downtown Minneapolis or uptown, really. And so the gal that had asked me to come in and do this with her group, she had to go outside and circle the building to make sure the music wasn't too loud so that we didn't have any complaints. Because we need it to be really loud while we're doing the breath work. Yes. And because that gets in you and it moves you and the vibrations shake you to your core. And that's part of the process. And so she went outside and did a lap of the building and came in and was like, oh, it's not too loud. I think we'll be okay. And I like that. Laugh because when I do it at my studio, I'm in a building with other people and I do it on a Sunday. So hopefully there aren't any other people there, but sometimes there are. And I put a sign on the door because every once in a while there will be someone there and they have to come and see what's going on because it's literally shaking the building.
Yeah.
And people will come to the door. And so I have a sign that says, hey, this is only going to last an hour. I apologize. You know, I'm trying to be as mindful as possible and do it on a Sunday. Yep. And it's only an hour. Yeah. So if you're okay with that, you know, there we go. But if you're having a lot of trouble with it and you're really upset about it, maybe you should join us for the next one because you can work some of that anger out.
Absolutely.
And so that's what my sign says. And nobody's taken me up on it yet. I think that they probably think I'm being kind of a smarty pants, but I'm not. I'm serious.
You're being cheeky.
I am being cheeky. But it's true. It's like, hey, if you've got some extra anger to work out, come in and join us and we'll help process it in a healthy way. So anyway, it's been cool. It's been fun. It's been busy and I'm happy about that.
Mercury retrograde is over. Thank God. It was such a bad one. Super happy about that.
Yeah. This one was a doozy.
Such a relief.
Yeah. This one was tough.
Oh my gosh. It just took it all out of me. This one. Oopta.
Normally I'm not too phased by it, but this one, I mean, if things, you know, and we're in the last little bits of Mercury retrograde. We're kind of in the downward cycle, right? And here I'm staring at Skype, which is just spinning.
I know.
Come on, Skype.
So it's like
don't
the last
fail us on
laugh.
The last day of retrograde.
It's the last laugh. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, Heidi, we have a really cool guest tonight. I'm so excited to bring him on.
You do.
We do. So everyone, welcome Nick Redford to the show. Nick, hi.
Hey guys.
How
Hello.
Are you?
How's it going?
Good. We're excited to have you with us again. Now you've been with us a couple of times, we haven't talked to you for a couple of years, so we know that you have a lot of new stuff going on. So we're definitely wanting to hear about that when we get into all of it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been a while actually. I think maybe 2019, maybe something like that.
I'm not sure. Yeah, it was definitely before COVID.
Yep. And I think we met him and did kind of a little interview with him at Paracon the last time that happened. And when was that, 2017 or 2018? And then we had him on our show, I think, the next year. So it probably was 2019.
Wow.
It's been a while. Yeah. But so Nick, what's shaken in your world?
Well, right now I'm horizontal on the couch with a margarita. So
nice,
I love it.
That's how
that
I
works.
Like to do it. but yeah, I've got this new book out right now called Diary of Secrets, and it's sort of a bit of a departure in the sense that it's not directly about UFOs themselves. It's about sort of like an alternative aspect to the UFO phenomenon, namely the connections to Marilyn Monroe, which is sort of, for a lot of people, you know, you bring that up and they're like, what, you know, and because a lot of people aren't aware of this sort of really strange, bizarre story that's sort of been floating around actually for a number of years, but most people in the UFO field have sort of either dismissed it or just didn't really know much about it. And over the years, I'd sort of written a few articles here and there. And then I decided, well, why not just sort of go all the way and tell the whole story and let everybody see what it is and what they think about it. And and what the, you know, what the full story is. And so that's what I'm doing right now, I guess. So.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I'm really excited to read the book because I love all of the stories about Marilyn Monroe and what everyone thinks truly happened to her. So this is a new swing on it for me. I've never heard the UFO connection before. So I'm excited to read this book, Nick.
Oh, well, thanks. And what's that?
I don't think I said anything, but yeah, we're just excited to read the book, and you guys can all find it on Amazon. So I will put the link here on the on our chat room if you're interested. And then all of Nick's books also are there. So, and he has quite a few. Can I just say? So
Without
you know, telling the whole story of the book, what kind of pieces can you kind of just dish, you know, that you can intrigue people with about this UFO in Maryland?
Like where did this concept come from, I
guess?
Yeah.
Well, basically, the story goes back to 1995. That's when the threads of the story first began. And it revolved around a guy named Milo Spiriglio, and he was someone who wrote three books on Marilyn, all on the angle that she was murdered because that the Kennedy brothers and the CIA, that basically she got sort of too much secret information, and somebody decided she had to go. And the reason why Marilyn knew so much, you know, secrets within government was because, you know, allegedly she was having affairs with both John F. Kennedy, the president at the time, and with Robert Kennedy as well. And as I said, you know, the word was that because she knew too much and she put it all in this diary that she kept, she was sort of a threat to national security. Now, Spiriglio, Milo Spiriglio, wrote these three books, which are very good books, by the way. And what it came down to was that Spiriglio was given anonymously this document, which was purported to be a CIA document that talked about how Marilyn had heard about the Roswell UFO crash and a story of dead, strange creatures out in the desert in the 1940s, which kind of sounds like the Roswell story. And the document itself supposedly was leaked out of a CIA archivist office a year or so before Spiriglio got the document. And the story is basically that this elderly archivist who knew of Spiriglio's work smuggled the document, the CIA document, out of the agency and handed it over to Spiriglio. Now, when you look at the document, you know, it actually is pretty intriguing because we know from the analysis of it that the typeface on the document, it's a one-page document, the typeface does actually tie in with the typeface from the 1950s and early 1960s. The paper is very old, aged, sort of brown and yellowy-orange in color, where it's sort of just faded away. And the names and places and everything else and the logos, the CIA logos on the documents, all work 100%, you know, it's everything is correct. So somebody went to, you know, if it's real, well, it's real. Some people have said, well, you know, what if it's a hoax? Well, if it's a hoax, somebody went to an incredible body to the extent of finding a 1950s typewriter, but also, and this is even more difficult, to actually get your hands on 1950s era government paper. And so, you know, a lot of work went into it. And what's more intriguing is that not long after the document surfaced, the whole thing was sort of closed down. We never heard again from this archivist. It was as if he decided he was going to put the story out there and then sort of get the hell out of Dodge, so to speak, and not sort of take any more role in it. So that's basically how it all began, with this leaked CIA document. And what's intriguing, but also a bit disturbing, is that the document talks about Marilyn was threatening to reveal everything that the Kennedys, that they told her, all about Roswell, about plans to invade Cuba and have Fidel Castro assassinated, things like this. And the document is actually dated one day before her death. And in the document, it talks about how she threatens the Kennedys that she's going to tell all. And as I said, that the ominous thing is she couldn't do that because the next day, you know, she was dead and under very mysterious circumstances. So that's how the story began. We've got this elderly guy handing over this elderly document about Marilyn, and lo and behold, it's got all these sort of government secrets that she was told. So, and that's how it began in the 1990s. And as I said earlier, most people in the field thought it was just too sensational. You know, it had everything, the Kennedys, Marilyn Monroe, flying saucers, aliens. But I was one of the ones who decided, well, you know, I'm not going to just toss it away, the story. I'm going to go as far as I can with it and see what the answers are, you know, and see how far you can go with the story.
That's awesome. Like I said, Nick, I'm really intrigued and I can't wait to get the book so that I can read it.
Oh, well, thank you.
Oh, it'll be awesome. So cool. So UFOs. So if I tell you, Nick, that I have Rh negative blood, what do you say?
Well, I mean, the whole Rh negative and positive angle within ufology is one of these subjects that is a fascinating one. Basically, people who are Rh negative, their blood is actually very different to people who are Rh positive. And most of us are Rh positive. People who are negative, their blood is very, very different. And I mean, to give you an example as to how different the blood is, if, for example, you have a man and a woman, they're having a baby, and one of them is Rh negative, the other one is Rh positive, the mother's immunity system will actually sort of perceive the Rh negative blood to be something, no pun intended, but something sort of alien that shouldn't be there. And for most of the time, it doesn't cause any problems because we have medication now to prevent this from happening. But decades ago, so in the 30s and 40s, you know, babies would die because the blood is so different. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's why we have these problems, like tragic situations of babies dying. But what's particularly intriguing also is the fact that many people in the UFO field, and particularly alien abductees, they have Rh negative blood. And if you sort of read the sheer number of reports of people who've had sort of really extraordinary UFO encounters, abduction events, things like this, and many of them do fall into this category. So one of the theories is the scenario or the idea of the possibility that perhaps in the distant past we were sort of genetically altered in varying ways, and that possibly we were altered. One of the theories is sort of you know, to quite literally to alter our DNA sort of our makeup, and with the and the negatives are essentially sort of very different to the rest of us. Now, when I say different, I don't mean that in sort of a sinister fashion or anything along those lines, because, you know, there's no difference in terms of how people look or talk or accents or anything. There's no difference at all. The only difference is this significant difference in the blood. Mm-hmm. And it is intriguing that in a lot of alien abduction events, people do talk about being on sort of laid out on tables, and the so-called black-eyed greys, the grey aliens, they will very often take significant amounts of blood out of the victim or the abductee. So this is why it sort of provoked this large sort of image or scenario of, you know, there being a sort of a deeper connection than the rest of us in relation to the whole angle of the blood being different. And you know, whether you buy into the UFO angle of it or not, you know, there actually is, we know why, you know, as I said, we know why, you know, we have these problems sometimes with blood, you know, and we have to be very, very careful, as I said, with particularly with a pregnant woman. But even though we know the difference and the hazards, what we don't know is why we aren't all Rh positive. You know, why is it that some are negative and some are positive? As I said, we know what the terminology means, but we don't understand fully as to why it's happening. And so it's, you know, it's, again, it's kind of like with the Marilyn thing. It's sort of, you know, one of these aspects of ufology that you don't hear too much about unless you're sort of really into, you know, that particular aspect of ufology.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nick, I do have, I have O negative blood. So, just saying. And of course,
well, you know, it's
of course, though, it but, runs in the family, you know, and my brothers say, well, you know, we have the big eyes, you know, we're definitely star people.
But, yeah, I mean, it's intriguing to know that, I mean, whenever I do interviews on the whole Rh negative issue, you know, people often say to me, like the hosts or people will phone in and say, you know, I'm Rh negative and, you know, I've had UFO experiences my entire life, things like that. So, and I can guarantee, you know, if I talked about it tonight, at least somebody would call in. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's intriguing because there's evidence, strong evidence, that some of the early humans were Rh negative as well. For example, one of the oldest strains of people in the UK, excuse me, in Europe, is the Basque people of Spain. And they're certainly among one of the oldest groups of people. And they have one of the highest numbers of Rh negative within the Basque people. So that in itself sort of suggests that the Rh negative angle is a very old one. It's not sort of, you know, a modern day thing. It's something that's been around a long, long time, this particular aspect of the Rh negative blood.
Yeah. It's very cool. And it is interesting because when I was pregnant, I had to have the shot, right? And my daughter turned out to be, she has positive blood, you know? But yeah, you know, you have the shot, so it prevents, you know, your body killing the fetus. And, you know, it's just kind of a crazy whole thing, you know?
Yes, it is. And that's why, you know, I mean, today, most people don't know about it or think about it because automatically, you know, it's routine to make sure that the baby doesn't have any hazards or anything like that. But as I said, back then, decades ago, it really was a dangerous thing. And babies would die tragically, unfortunately.
Goodness. So I have a question for you. So we have U.S. troops listening to our show tonight, which is really fun. And they have an interesting question for you, Nick. They're asking, of all the things that you have written about and spoken about, what is the topic that is the least believable in your opinion?
That's a good question.
I know. I thought it was great.
Was that within the UFO subject, was it?
Well, I think it's any of yours, because you have so many books out there and you talk about so many different things. So anything that you've written about.
Well, you've really put me on the spot now. I might have to come back on that as we go through.
I have to think about it. You can let it stew and see what comes up.
I'll come up with an answer. I'll come up with the answer, though, before the show's over. Don't worry.
I love it. And since we're talking about UFOs, one of the things that we talk about a lot on our show is the whole Men in Black phenomenon. And I know you have a book about that, but you just know so much about the Men in Black. And you just need to, if you could just have a couple of minutes spiel about them for our listeners, because I know they're so interested in what you have to say about them.
Yeah. Well, the whole Men in Black issue is an interesting one. I've actually done three books on the Men in Black and one on the Women in Black. Now, when people think of the Men in Black, the first thing everybody thinks of is Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, because that's what we know from the movies. But a lot of people don't know or realize that the movies, the Hollywood movies, which, they're a good, fun movies, but they're very different to the real Men in Black. For example, nearly all of the people who had these sort of visits and threats from the Men in Black, and even to this day, they still wear sort of like black suits and skinny black ties and even sort of like 1950s fedora black hats. Now, most of the witnesses to the MIB have described them, and the women as well, with their skin being sort of very pasty, and sometimes the skin is sort of like the color of milk. I mean, we're talking about, really white-colored. They very often have these bulging eyes that they hide behind these wraparound sunglasses. And bizarrely, in many cases, they wear sort of badly fitting wigs, and I'm not sort of exaggerating. It's almost as if they're trying to camouflage their real appearance. In other words, the real Men in Black, as I said, very different to Hollywood's version. But if you read most of the reports from the 40s onward, people are described them as not looking entirely human. And they have this sort of creepy appearance, and people have said their skin kind of looks like plastic, almost like a mannequin, that kind of thing. So whatever the real Men in Black are, they're very different to Hollywood's version. But as well as that, you could make a case that they're not even human. So there's a lot of weird stuff surrounding the Men in Black and the Women in Black, which actually goes down not just a UFO path, but also down, if you like, sort of a paranormal avenue as well. For example, when the Men in Black have been in people's homes, people have on a number of occasions sort of experienced sort of like dangerous poltergeist. With violent movement in the house, like a chair will suddenly fling across the room or a window will shatter, that kind of thing. It's almost as if sort of residual energy is left behind after they've gone. And there's a lot of parallels between the women in black and the men in black and what have become known as the black-eyed children, which, you know, their skin looks the same. They dress in black, but instead of the fedoras, they have the black hoodies. But they look kind of like the men in black and women in black, but sort of 20 years younger or whatever. And so I think there's a lot of connections with all of these and other things like the shadow people and another one known as the Hat Man, which is sort of like a shadowy type of figure, but kind of looks, in terms of a silhouette, it kind of looks like the men in black as well. So yeah, it goes far beyond just, you know, like Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, you know, sort of hauling in the aliens. It's not really like that. Yeah, the movies are good, but it's very different to. Yeah. It's almost like a gothic horror story when you sort of when you dig into the MIB stories.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, interesting stuff. You know, we're halfway past the hour, so we are going to go to commercial break, and we will be back in 2 minutes. This is the Gathering Radio Show on the Para X Radio Network.
For a truly unique podcast experience, we have you covered. Spirit Bayou with CJ Dunham airs live from the Third Coast in Southeast Texas on Tuesday and Fridays at midnight Eastern Time, covering Creole folklore and folk magic to strange paranormal activity to new equipment for the field. CJ Dunham is a Catholic swamp witch, a devotee to our Mother Mary in the Trinity, a true believer in our Lord, the Holy Ghost, and Christ. Peace be with your spirit and the spirits by you.
In order for the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock for Dark Sun Rising on the Para-X Radio Network.
Haunted by shadow people in the middle of the night?
Do you secretly love all things creepy and spooky, enjoying ghost stories and horror fiction from the best storytellers?
Do you have a true ghost experience you want to share, but no one will believe you?
If yes, listen to the professionals on What Are You Afraid Of? Horror Paranormal Show, Friday nights at 9 p.m. on Para X Radio and at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com.
What are you afraid of on Para X?
Our creepy and demented hosts are on call to provide you with all your spooky needs with true ghost stories, interviews, indie music, and new horror fiction.
We are ready to scare you.
Para X.
Welcome back to the Gathering Radio Show on the Para X Radio Network. We have Nick Redfern with us tonight, who is a cryptozoology expert and esteemed author, and we are super glad to have him on with us tonight. We've been talking about his newest book and a bunch of other interesting topics that we have now gotten an answer to the question that was posed to you earlier in the show, Nick, correct? You've thought of something that is somewhat hard to wrap your mind around, something you think is hard to wrap your mind around. What do you have for us?
What I was talking about, when you put me on the spot, was this, you know, what I don't believe in. There's a lot I do believe in, but one thing for sure I don't believe in is mermaids. Unless it's like Daryl Hannah in Splash, that would be a different thing.
Awesome. What about it doesn't ring true with you? Like, is there something that you just can't wrap your mind around, or what part of that? Because a lot of people do believe in them. Mm-hmm. So why don't you?
Well, I think more than anything else, you know, it's the specific issue of, you know, having a creature that's sort of half mammal and half fish, which is unheard of, you know. So, But in terms of, you know, entertainment and an interest in folklore, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a lot. That's why mermaid books are actually quite popular. But for me, it's just a little bit much or too much of a stretch, really. But I guess, you know, there's always one thing that somebody, or two things, you know, that somebody's not really into or thinks garbage. But who knows, you know, if I see one, I'll let you know, and we'll bring her on the show, maybe.
Well, you know what, Nick, I think that should be the new book for you. I think you really need to dig into this, because I really believe that mermaids are real. I think they're a real thing. I think there's a lot of different kinds of evidence out there. And I'm not going to go into my beliefs, but I'm just going to say there's a lot of things out there that make me think they're totally real. Now, could they be seals, you know, that, you know, people see? And sometimes I spend a lot of time near the ocean. I get it. You know what I mean? But, wow, I mean, there's, you know, drawings from ancient peoples of mermaids. I mean, something is up out there in the ocean, you know?
Well, actually, that's a good point, because there are some researchers who think, you know, that there may not be real mermaids, but, you know, that over the centuries or the thousands of years, you know, maybe, you know, rumors and things like friend of a friend stories have changed over time, and that, you know, possibly somebody sees something, you know, out in the oceans and excited and has an awareness of the legends and the tradition of mermaids, you know, and maybe you get a little bit, you know, sort of, you know, really fired up, and possibly, you know, that would create some of the legends. You know, that wouldn't surprise me, you know, if a large fish sort of, you know, sort of burst out of the water with the water flying everywhere and a big tail, and or flipper, I should say. Mm-hmm. And so, in other words, you know, you could be in a situation where it creates a legend of a mermaid. But if anybody finds one, bring it over here, and like I said, we'll get her on the show.
Well, I think you and I have to have a conversation about this, Nick, because I think that would be a really cool topic for you to do some research on and write a book about, you know, because there's just a lot of stuff out there, you know, and I just am I'm such a believer, you know, until somebody says absolutely not, I think they're out there.
But yeah, I don't know, Steph. I think you're asking him to write a book on something he doesn't want to write about.
I know. I can sense.
Here's something you can write about. Something you're not interested in. How about that?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Really, you know, writing a book on mermaids is my thing, really. But
yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. Well, because I know that we have some Bigfoot people in our chat room tonight, let's move on to Sasquatch or Bigfoot or hairy humanoids. How about that?
Well, yeah, the whole Bigfoot phenomenon, that's an interesting one. You know, people who sort of aren't fully aware of the subject, you know, occasionally people say to me, you know, well, how does he hide all around the country? And it's like, well, there's not one of them. You know, we call it Bigfoot, but it should really be the big foots or the big feet, you know. because when you say, you know, you go looking for Bigfoot, it makes it sound like there's just one in the entirety yes. of the United States. It should be stupid, you know. That would be ridiculous.
No wonder nobody can find him, right?
Yeah, really? It's like, yeah. Where's Waldo? There's just one, and yeah. You're just looking yeah. for him everywhere.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, joking aside, I mean, reports of Bigfoot have been reported in every state apart from Hawaii, and most people describe them as looking sort of 7, sometimes up to 8 foot tall, huge ape-like animals. Now, you know, so far at least, you know, the creatures themselves have eluded us, and we don't know exactly what they are, but they do fall into the category of something, of some kind of ape, but we don't know, you know, exactly what type. But in saying that, there are actually some interesting weird stories as well, where people have seen these creatures deep in the woods, and they suddenly like vanish in a flash of light, or they're surrounded by these little orbs of light, and they literally become sort of invisible, or they sort of just vanish into nothing, or possibly like a multi-dimensional situation. And there's enough data, at least, to put sort of a serious have a serious discussion about it all. A lot of people who look for things like Bigfoot and Nessie, people like me, we go out there looking for these things, but very often you do find these sort of rogue kind of stories where Bigfoot seems to be far more than just the equivalent of like an African gorilla. You know, there's something much different, and a lot of researchers of the Bigfoot phenomenon believe or suspect that these things are not just wild animals, but possibly they could sort of jump in and out of multi-dimensions, things like this, like wormholes, that kind of thing, and that they're highly evolved, and that's why we never catch one. So there's this fascinating side of Bigfoot, which is almost like a supernatural side, but then you have, on the other side of the coin, you've got people who believe that it is just an ape and nothing else. But I've spoken to enough people that make me believe and conclude that we are dealing with something, a sort of supernatural creature, however you want to define the term supernatural or paranormal. But I think Bigfoot, I think those creatures, there's something else about them that we don't understand. Because if you think about it, you've got these creatures all around the United States, and they're sort of around about 7 feet tall, and we can't even catch one of them. It's like most people don't see, face to face with a mountain lion or a grizzly bear, but people do, but most people don't. However, when it comes to Bigfoot, the Bigfoot creatures, they elude us 100% of the time. They never get shot and killed. They never get hit, sort of roaming across the road in the woods late at night, like in the Pacific Northwest. And everything about Bigfoot is bizarre, even though I believe that it is a real creature in some form. But when you look into it, you either have to ignore the weird stuff, as a lot of people do, but I don't. And for me, I come to the conclusion that these are creatures. They are living animals of some sort, but they have sort of far advanced psychic powers, things like that, and are very different from just your average animal living in the woods,
Well, I'm a Bigfoot. I'm in Bigfoot cryptid research, Nick, and so I've logged hundreds of hours in the woods looking for the big guy, and Heidi has too. She's been right alongside me, and we've spoken to like Dave in our chat room is a First Nations individual, and Bigfoot has always been a part of their culture, and he's always been there, and we've talked to so many First Nations people who all have the same story, told in different ways, but they talk about, Sabi is the Ojibwe word for Bigfoot here in Minnesota, and they all talk about he's here and he takes care of them, but stay away from him, but he'll always take care of his people. But yes, he's very spiritual, I believe he's multidimensional, personally, and we do see, and I know you've been out there too, Nick, on the trail looking for Sasquatch, and you've seen the lights associated with Bigfoot.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw some. This was back in 2003 in East Texas, in an area called the Big Thicket, and The Big Thicket is a large area of forest in East Texas, bordering towards Louisiana. And there's a road that runs through the area itself, the Big Thicket. And what's intriguing is that the road that goes through it, it's called Ghost Light Road, because people see these little balls of light flitting around the woods, about anywhere from the size of about a tennis ball to, on occasions, up to about the size of like a beach ball. And they seem to be almost like an intelligent energy. You get to get towards them, and they sort of move away. You move away a bit, and they'll come a little bit closer to you. And the second time I went out to the Big Thicket with a number of colleagues and friends, and I actually saw one of these balls of light, and I would say it was around somewhere between like a tennis ball and a soccer ball, something in between there, and it was only there for maybe 2 or 3 seconds, and then it just blinked out. What they are and what the phenomenon is, I don't know, but what I can say for sure is that where you have these balls of light, you very often do have reports of the Bigfoot creatures as well.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that fascinating? It's really fascinating.
That sounds like what we saw that night in the swamp,
mm-hmm.
stuff,
mm-hmm.
when we were out on our overnight.
Yep.
And we saw those balls of light that exactly the same size you're talking about, Nick, is just right there in that size, and they didn't last long, and they just kind of blop, they blip in and then they're gone. And but definitely in an area where there's stick structures and other identifiers that look to be Bigfoot related.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And, we've had, when we've been north, when we've been up in northern Minnesota, and we've had the video rolling, and we know that we feel like, anyway, Sasquatch has been there. We have seen lights in the lights towards the top of the treetops. We've actually think sometimes we didn't actually see them, but they came up on the video, which is interesting too. It's crazy. And some people, Nick, and you've probably heard this too, feel like maybe that's his way of traveling from here to there.
You never know.
Kind of like beam me up, Scotty.
Why.
Yeah.
What's that? Sorry.
I said it's kind of like the whole beam me up, Scotty thing. Somehow they figured out how to do that. I don't know. It's interesting. It's all interesting for sure.
Yeah, because you do have that sort of here one second, gone the next second. That's always around. Bigfoot. It's this elusiveness where they're so elusive. It's almost impossible.
Yes. So you grab the ball, it turns red, and you lose time. Oh, I don't know about that, Sherry. She's asking in our chat room. Sorry, we digress. and then I know that you also talk about, is it chupacabra? Is that how you say that word? I have a hard time with that one. But you have experience chupacabra. With that cryptid.
Yeah, I've never seen one, but I've been on many expeditions onto Puerto Rico, where the original chupacabras first surfaced in the summer of 1995, and I've been to Puerto Rico many times now on expeditions, and also because Puerto Rico is one of my favorite places to go. It's a really cool place, everybody's friendly, and and it's got a really sort of positive and nice vibe, and it's also got what's known as the El Yunque rainforest, and the El Yunque rainforest is this gigantic rainforest that covers much of Puerto Rico, and it was in 1995. In and around the forest itself, the rainforest itself, people started to see this strange creature. And it's about the size of a chimpanzee, but with its skin, sort of a greenish color, and with these spikes down its head and neck, kind of like a punk rock mohawk kind of thing from the top of the head down to the spine. And some people said it had sort of membranous type wings, that kind of thing. And the creatures weren't that big, they're only sort of about maybe 4 feet tall, but very agile and kind of able to run very fast, like a chimpanzee, you know, they can race really fast, and kind of like that. And the reports, as I said, began mid-1990s, and it really took off big time. And my first time out there was in 2003 with a team from the Sci-Fi Channel for a show called Proof Positive. And since then, I've been out there many times now looking for these creatures, and there's a lot of good, solid eyewitness testimony. And, you know, and it's also because the Chupacabra has become a piece of sort of pop culture in Puerto Rico as well. You can buy, like, Chupacabra baseball hats, T-shirts, you know, you name it. It's probably been turned into the Chupacabra.
Awesome.
Wow, that's cool.
That is cool.
I'd like to see one of those, as long as it doesn't hurt me.
Yeah, I was just going to say, as long as it doesn't hurt us, you know, we're happy to see one. And then, of course, there's the Mothman. Now, what do you think about the Mothman, Nick?
Well, again, that's another strange one. And actually, for people who might be interested, every year in September, there's a Mothman Festival, which is put on every year in the town of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, which is where the Mothman was first seen, and was around there for almost a year, from 1966 to 67. And the sightings of the Mothman continued until the one of the huge bridges that crossed the Ohio River, which is... basically, what happened was, in December 67, the Silver Bridge, as it's known, collapsed into the Ohio River, killing, or drowning, I should say, more than 40 people. And a lot of people in town believed that the Mothman was either a warning entity, in the sense that it knew something, kind of like... you know, a situation where these creatures or creature knew that there was going to be a disaster, or it provoked the disaster. There's, depending on which side of the coin you're on, those are the two sort of angles. Now, it's called Mothman because people describe it as sort of very humanoid, in the sense a head, two arms, two legs, you know, walks, moves like us, but has like a huge pair of wings, almost like a, you would call like bat-like wings, something along those lines, or a gargoyle, that sort of thing. And also with these bright, shiny, fiery red eyes. And the sightings of Mothman and UFOs and the Men in Black as well were around in Point Pleasant, West Virginia as well. When you look at the story, it's a fascinating one that has all these different aspects of the paranormal. And when the events, such as the collapse of the bridge occurred, it pretty much all came to an end. However, such was the sort of the memory attached to all of this, and the tragedy as well. About 15, 16 years ago, the city of Point Pleasant decided to put on every year a Mothman Festival. Although a lot of people did die, basically what they wanted to do was not to make it a down and depressing kind of situation, but to try and, you know, try and look on the positive angle of, you know, let's try and, you know, get away from the angle of the tragedy, and, you know, can we do something which would hopefully, you know, help people. And so you can go there to Point Pleasant every September, and they have bands playing there, and, you know, people dress up as Mothman, and you can buy, like, Mothman cookies and Mothman beer and all sorts of things. And I'm not kidding when I say that sometimes, you know, they have sort of 7,000 or 8,000 people turn up for the weekend outdoor events, and it's, you know, and it's good fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. I know, that's one.
I would love to go to that.
Heidi, yes, we thought about going.
Yeah. I am wearing my Mothman T-shirt in honor of your visiting us tonight, Nick.
I have one more question for you, and then I promise that'll be it. But our troops are asking one more question, and they're asking about, you know, it was when we were talking about Sasquatch, but they're talking about the, I don't know how to pronounce this, and I've seen it so many times, but it's the Dyatlov Pass incident in 1959. You know, that one where all the people they found him dead. Do you think that was a Yeti thing, or do you think, like, the new thought is that an avalanche came and killed them all? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, the Dyatlov Pass is a strange one. Late 50s, Russia, and this group of friends out in the ice and the snow and sort of killed and, you know, very weird and violent fashion that's far more sort of animalistic than, you know, than anything that a human would do. And, you know, the situations and everything surrounding it is just totally bizarre. There have been several books so far already sort of looked into it, you know, and you know, the story, for people who haven't heard of it, Dyatlov, Dyatlov Pass in Russia, his friends, colleagues, and just, you know, and ended up dead in really weird circumstances. But, I mean, theories, you know, include things like the Russian equivalent of Bigfoot. You know, for the most part, you know, we're talking about something very much like Bigfoot and the Abominable Snowman, also known as the Yeti. Other people think they could be sort of primitive humans, you know, like an early type of human that perhaps did not become extinct and still, you know, still surviving. Some people even sort of focus on maybe Neanderthals and things like mm-hmm. that, which mm-hmm. if that was true, you know, when we actually proved and found that there are still Neanderthals still around in isolated areas of Russia, you know, in vast areas of, you know, the forests and snow and etc. That would be an incredible, development and finding, because, you know, in one respect, we'd have to recognize them as humans, you know, not mm-hmm. exactly Homo sapien like us, but they would still be humans, and they would have, arguably, they would have the you know, the same rights as us. You know, there's a lot of things to think about if we did actually find one of these things.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Thought-provoking, well, for sure.
It is Thought-Provoking Tuesday. It's also the end of our show.
You know, we have 2 minutes left. I just want to put in a plug for our sibling show, The Calling, tomorrow night at 9 p.m. or at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't forget to listen. Nick, is there any final words you want to say?
Well, I guess the one thing I often say to people is that, you know, if you're interested in all these different things, whether it's Men in Black, Bigfoot, lake monsters, whatever it is, you know, and you've got an interest in it, you know, go after it. And, you know, because for me, you know, you can get a lot out of doing these investigations and you know, thinking, well, you know, there's a possibility we may actually find these things, you know, if we keep looking. And that, and so for me, you know, it's the enthusiasm and the excitement of going out there looking for these things. And I always tell people, if you want to do this, you know, don't just think about it. Actually go out and do it and enjoy it, you know.
I love it. Awesome. Thank you so much, Nick. I hope you'll come on again soon at some point. And everyone, buy his new book about Marilyn and the UFO and all of those kind of things. And everyone, thank you for listening. Troops, thanks for listening. Be safe, and thank you for your service.
And thanks to Para X for...
Guys.
Yes, thanks, Nick, and thanks to Para X for hosting us, and Sarge, our most amazing producer. Everybody listening in the chat room, we love you all, and we will see you all next week.